Human consciousness, dowsing, ESP, it's all tied together. Paul Smith is back with us on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Paul, tell us how you use this to find your keys.
Well, you know, back when we were just first starting to play with this, what happened was we were trying to figure out, we were doing things that didn't actually directly involve operations. We were practicing and trying out first to see if we could even make it work, right?
Yeah.
So I'd been attending meetings of the American Society of Dowsers, their chapter up in Baltimore, the Chesapeake chapter, and learned some standard kind of finding things, dowsing techniques. So here I am down at the office at Fort Meade, and my cubicle mate, Gabby Pettengill, comes in and she says, "I've lost my keys." And she had to leave for home. She had some appointment she had to get to. "I lost my keys. Can't find them." Well, this is the winter in Maryland, and probably 150 feet between where we were standing and where her car was, and they could have been lost anywhere along there inside the building or out. And so she said, "Why don't you try your dowsing and see if you can find it?" I said, "Well, okay." And so I'd been playing around with deviceless dowsing at the time, where you don't actually have an instrument, where you just go by your intuitions and so on. And so I retraced the path he'd followed, just kind of trying to feel rather than look. I wasn't looking for the keys, I was trying to feel where they were, with no clue whether this was going to work or not, right? And so I go up to the front of the building, and I go out to the car, and I retrace my steps to try and figure out where it felt the strongest, and I kind of get to a place where I kind of just sort of stop, and I'm trying to feel and not really looking, and then I sort of look down at my feet, and there, about 6 inches out from the sidewalk, straight down in about 7 inches of snow, there's this little tiny hole, and her keys were at the bottom of that hole.
I love it.
I mean, looking for them, you never would have found them. And that made me a believer at that point,
right,
when that worked.
Give us a dowsing session. Show us mentally. Picture it for us. How is this done?
Well, of course, that depends on what sort of, what mode of dowsing you're going to try. Now, we've identified several different ones. The original SRI research discussed there being two modes of dowsing: discrete and continuum. Discrete dowsing is where what you're looking for may be in, well, let's say half a dozen different locations, but you know it's in one of those locations. It's not going to be in between those locations.
Okay.
Okay. That's discrete. And then there is continuum, where it could be anywhere on an entire plane. You know, that's usually searching for water would be a continuum. Looking for those lost keys was a continuum kind of dowsing thing. Okay. So that's one thing. And you can do those. They're different ways to approach that sometime. But more interestingly, there are other a sort of different dimensionality to it, where there is field dowsing, where you're looking for water or something physical out there and wherever you're at. There is map dowsing, where you're trying to find the location of someone or something as represented on a map,
mm-hmm.
so you can go find them. There is, and I've broken it down in these, there's informational dowsing, where you're dowsing for information. There is diagram dowsing, and then there is matrix dowsing. Okay, so you know, we've got all these different things, and we explain all this in the course, how you do each one of these. But let's take map dowsing, because that's probably the simplest to describe here. Let's say you're looking for Terry Waite, the Anglican clergyman that was kidnapped by Hezbollah somewhere in Lebanon. Okay, he's being held somewhere in Lebanon.
All right.
Now, we hadn't really developed the dowsing procedures, so we didn't use that on Terry Waite, but he's a good example of how you would do it if you're trying to find a hostage, okay? So what you could do is you know that Terry Waite is in Lebanon somewhere. At least the odds are 99.999% that he's there, that he hasn't been taken somewhere else. He's in Lebanon somewhere. So you first start off with a map of Lebanon. You have it on your table, okay? Now, how do you actually find where on the map is? And I'll just briefly discuss this. There's a lot of nuances that I won't get into here, but you want a straight edge. You want your dowsing implement, whether that's a pendulum or a L-rod or whatever you might use. And you take the straight edge, and you start at one side of the map, and you slide it across until you get an indication from your instrument. You draw a line on your map, and then you put the ruler at 90-degree angles to the line you just drew and draw it down the line. and then draw another line there, and then
try to intersect it, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
You intersect. Basically, it's triangulation is what you're trying to do, and then you do it a third time, and you get kind of a little triangle. Within that triangle, presumably, is going to be where Terry Waite is located. And so you're sitting at a table. You have a map. You have your tools: a straight edge, a pen, and a pendulum in this case, perhaps. And you aren't walking around the field with a forked stick, right? You're there in an air-conditioned room, presumably, and trying to find something that is literally thousands of miles away, or can be thousands of miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one approach.
Now, how do you get the three different lines? I mean, don't you just get one line all the time, the same one?
Well, if you get one line, let's say that line is exactly on the location that you're trying to find. You're scooting it down the map. The straight edge crosses the line on which the Terry Waite.
Right, but there could be 20 cities along the line.
Well, that's
right?
The problem. It can be anywhere on that line.
Okay.
So one line is certainly going to narrow down the possibilities. But even in Lebanon, we're talking potentially of 100 miles or so, right? Maybe longer. And how do you know where on that line? So that's why you need the second line.
Okay, but what do you tell yourself, what do you think about to create that second line?
Okay, now here's another connection. In fact, that's very good. I'm glad you brought that up. Here's another connection between remote viewing and dowsing. What is important to remote viewing is the power of intention. Human intentionality plays a huge role in remote viewing and the success of remote viewing. Intentionality plays an equally major role, and in very much the same way, in dowsing. You have to focus your intention on what you are seeking. And so if you're trying to find Terry Waite, then perhaps you have a photograph. Perhaps you have something that belonged to him that you have in your presence. If all you have is a name, then you focus on the name. And you try and hold that in your head, as far as I'm looking, or wherever consciousness is, right? You try and hold that in your consciousness. Okay, I'm looking for Terry Waite. And focus on Terry Waite. And then just attend to your own personal reactions. And when you have that fixed in your mind and learn the nuances and the subtleties of how you personally, internally react and how that affects the instrument, if you're using a dowsing instrument, then you can actually start getting somewhere where you're being successful in your dowsing.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Accuracy rate, how high?
You know, and here's the irony. We can't say yet what that is. In fact, we're hoping that we will over time build a sufficient database that we can give you an idea on that. One of the problems with dowsing is that it hadn't been really scientifically explored in any serious way from its original inceptions, which potentially are thousands of years ago. And really, there have been some scientific experiments, but they've usually been done trying to determine whether dowsing is real or not, and it depends on whether you're a skeptic or a believer, whether you got any results, and what your results were. That was one of the further interesting things about the secret government research that is now present in those archives I was telling you about. It was done at SRI, is they were worried about, were focusing to see if it worked or not. That was part of the research, but another part of it was to determine how well it worked and how they could improve it, which really wasn't the focus of any dowsing research before that. In a way, that's a path-breaking kind of a thing that they were involved in. And in fact, they did find ways to improve it, which are incorporated into the course I've been talking about. And they did find some factors that influence how well you do and how well you don't do. They learned one further thing, which, again, some people may see this as obvious once they hear it, but nonetheless, it wasn't so obvious and still isn't to most people. You actually do improve with practice, with dowsing. And that had never been quantified before, but they were able to quantify to some degree how practice helped the dowser improve in success in finding what they were dowsing for.
Does it make you a better remote viewer as well, the more you practice dowsing?
You know, I kind of think it does, and of course, now there's a virtue of them being the inverse of each other, because even though at the foundational level, at the fundamental human consciousness level, dowsing and remote viewing are very closely tied, in the actual practice of it, they're enough different that the peculiarities of dowsing versus the peculiarities of remote viewing don't intrude on each other. Yet the things that you learn in attending to your subconscious and keeping intention in mind and that sort of thing, those things actually do help you in developing your remote viewing capabilities.
How would you recommend someone use this in their day-to-day life? I mean, we talked, I was joking about stock picks, but I mean, seriously, if you're good at this, can you use dowsing for that, and how would you?
Yeah, I would say, of course, I don't have a brokerage license, so I'm only going to make this as a guess, right?
And we're not asking you for specific picks.
I think that you probably could if you got good enough. Now, obviously, just any time you want to use, for example, with associative remote viewing, you want to use that in picking stocks. There's a whole lot more to it than just remote viewing. You've got to figure out how to identify the stocks you're kind of just going to try and distinguish between. You got to figure out when to sell and when to buy, because you can be right in associative remote viewing and still lose money because you don't set your parameters right and things like that. Same thing can happen with dowsing. If you're going to use it for investing, there's a lot of other things that don't even have to do with dowsing that you also have to be smart about. But if you have all your ducks in a row with that, and you're good enough with dowsing, you've got enough practice and experience, and you know how you react and things like that, I think that dowsing could be a very useful tool. Interestingly, I held a live dowsing class I guess it was last November, brought some of my best remote viewing students in, advanced and intermediate students in for the class. And
did they practice dowsing before?
Most of them had not.
Had not, okay.
A couple of them had tried it, but they all uniformly said that they had learned things that they had no clue about. This was new stuff, and that they actually had some great successes. I may tell you about one of them in a minute, but the closing exercise, when I teach my associate remote viewing classes, we do the Texas Pick 3 lottery, and we've had some real close calls on that. We haven't hit the bankroll yet, but we've come close. Well, I thought, well, why don't we try the lottery as our closeout exercise with dowsing as well? And we tried it there, and I didn't use the Pick 3. If I had it, I think we'd have had more success. When you get too many variables, even in dowsing, it can lessen your chances.
Sure, it'll muddy it up somehow.
Yeah, but we tried the lottery, and in fact, one of my students went home and continued to try it, concentrating on the Pick 3, and he actually, every time he does it, he gets a little bit closer to getting it right, I think.
He's tuning himself up, huh?
Yeah, he'll give me a phone call and say, man, I got, you know, these numbers this time, and the real number was this, and it's like be one number off, you know, or something like
what
that.
What are the odds of picking the Pick 3?
Oh, wow. I don't know what that is.
I bet I can get it. Somebody will send it to me.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
And then the odds for two and then one of them.
But I'm not much of a statistician, so I'd have to do
it. I'd like to see that, what the odds are for each one. One number, two numbers, and three numbers.
Yeah.
That would be kind of neat
to
look at.
They're not, certainly not as much as like the regular lottery, but they're still pretty high. Otherwise, the state would be going broke.
Absolutely. Paul, what is it about the universe? What is it about this connection that allows people to be able to do this?
Well, the simple answer would be we don't know. But that's not satisfactory. Humans always want to know.
We want to know. We want answers.
Yeah, we want answers. And there are at least some plausible ones, or speculatively plausible. I don't know if that makes any sense. How does this work? Well, obviously, I mentioned intentionality. That seems clear. To me, it's the whole aspect of consciousness that makes a difference here. The universe, as we understand it generally in our current scientific worldview, if you take humans out of it, is pretty much a clockwork thing. Now, there'll be physicists who quibble with that description, but when you get right down to it, it is. The whole thing operates on a cause and effect, which is essentially what's known as a deterministic process. Nothing happens unless it has a preceding cause, and that cause doesn't happen unless it's got a cause before it. And if you knew all of the facts of all of the laws of nature and all of the values of the variables, you presumably could trace the entire universe back to the Big Bang or as far forward as it continues to go and be able to predict everything, because it just is kind of a lockstep procedure. Now, quantum physics throws a little bit of a monkey wrench in that, but at what they call the classical range, you know, the Newtonian realm, which is the world of big things like cars and buses and planets and and solar systems, it's all pretty much fits the deterministic mode. So then without human consciousness, everything just sort of goes like this, like a machine. I think it's human consciousness that is the, what you might call the eccentricity wheel, the thing that throws everything off. Okay, because consciousness exists in the universe, there are certain things that aren't predictable, and there are certain things that happen that shouldn't happen in a standard deterministic system. Okay, there are things that shouldn't happen according to the laws of cause and effect. And some of those things are like remote viewing, and they're like dowsing. And how does human consciousness do that? That is unclear, but it seems so far is unclear. I think we're making slow progress in understanding it. It may have to do with quantum non-locality or entanglement, as they say. It may have to do with that. At any rate, it's human consciousness that makes all the difference, seems to me.
That's a good point. Paul, this is remarkable stuff. And how then do we tune ourselves? How do we keep practicing? I mean, some people have the ability to learn from you. Other people may never meet you. How do we do this?
Well, there are people out there, and if we're talking strictly about dowsing here, there are people out there who are excellent dowsers that have learned on their own through trial and error. And they may have learned the kinds of lessons that the military discovered in the process of research and application. They may have learned all that. Some of them may have learned it and don't even know what it was they learned. They just know that what they do works. Of course, that happens with a lot of self-taught folks. They may play an instrument by ear, and they can play beautiful music, but they couldn't tell you about the theory. It's why it sounds right. They just know it does, right? So there are some folks who do it through trial and error. That, of course, is really the hard way to go about it. I taught myself to play guitar, and I really should have had a teacher.
1,000 to 1 for the pick three. Those are the odds.
1,000 to 1. Okay, there you go. That's pretty impressive.
1,000 to 1. And if you can do it on a regular basis, then you're doing something special.
Well, each time you do it, then that if you do it like 2 times in a row, the probability of that, of course, is, I don't know, what is that, 1,000? I think 1,000,000 to 1, maybe.
Yeah, then it goes up even higher.
Yeah, it continues like that. But once is plenty, well, it isn't plenty because there's always a possibility of a fluke. But when you consider that in most research, statistical significance is 0.05, in other words, 5 out of 100. If you get 1 out of 1,000, you're really highly statistically significant in at least that one instance.
If somebody's offered a job, let's say, maybe they don't like it, but they're offered it. They do dowsing with a pendulum. Could they ask themselves the question, should I take it or not, and then go by whatever the pendulum says?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked that question because this was something I wanted to cover. You can do that. Now, here's the catch. And I'll go back to associative remote viewing for a minute. You can use ARV, let's say, to pick between two cars. Am I going to buy? Should I buy this car or buy that car? Right? You can use ARV to decide which car, but the fact is, it's not very good because you're going to make a decision and make one option. You'll never know how the other option would have come out.
Right.
Now the same thing happens with dowsing. So let's say it's actually better if we have two different jobs. Should I take the job here in Austin or take the job in Milwaukee? Okay. And you've done all the research, you've studied it out, and you come down to it's 50-50. You don't know which one to take. You just have no idea. Well, you can use dowsing to pick one, and here's what the deal is. You still won't know what the outcome would have been if you'd have picked the other thing, but you would have been 50-50 anyway. If you boiled it down to this choice or that choice, and you couldn't determine between the two of them, you would have essentially flipped a coin when you picked one anyway. With dowsing, you are certainly not going to be any worse than 50-50%. I didn't say that very well. You're not going to be any worse than 50-50 on the outcome, because that's what you would have had to begin with. But if your subconscious does know something and convey that your conscious awareness is unaware of, and it conveys it to you through the dowsing process, you may end up actually having a better chance of making the right decision.
Stay with us, Paul. We'll be back. Hey, we'll take some fast blast questions for Paul Smith now if you want. In the next hour, your phone calls. We'll be back on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, Paul, you know, I'm going to do a Ouija board experiment in a few weeks. How would you compare using the Ouija board to the pendulum and the dowsing? Is there any similarities there?
Well, I think that Ouija boards, to whatever degree they actually work, probably work very much on the same principle as dowsing. There's obviously some differences in the Ouija board. You're actually spelling out things, and but there seems to be some subconscious things that are going on that are moving the, I forget what they call the little gadget, starts with a P anyway, from letter to letter.
The planchette.
There you go, planchette. From letter to letter, number to number, okay? It's interesting that one of the other things that we've kind of sorted out about dowsing is what started out originally as a skeptical attack on dowsing.
Really?
Yeah, there's this interesting sort of quasi-psychological phenomenon that goes on with humans called the ideomotor response. What that is if you are thinking about doing something physically, moving in a certain way or doing some kind of physical action, the muscles that would normally support that actually activate and even to some degree tense and untense.
Like you're going to do sit-ups, let's say.
Yeah, your stomach muscles actually perform the action even though it's at a very subtle level where you're not actually doing it. So if for example, you see you're at a ball game and the pitcher throws the ball and you try and imagine what it would be like to throw that ball even though your arm doesn't move,
right.
The muscles actually perform some action. Very slight, you can't even tell it, but they do happen. And skeptics originally, in fact, in this book called Water Witching USA, they suggested that it was the ideomotor response that made it work. So the dowsers are out looking for water, and of course the focus of the book was dowsing for water. They're trying to debunk that. Dowsers are out looking for water. Where the dowser believes that there's water, the ideomotor response causes the L rods or the forked stick or whatever the dowser might be using to actually act. And so the skeptic said, well, that's all there is to it. The guy has this notion that the water is at a certain place, and he goes out there, and sure enough, his muscles cause that to happen, even though he consciously didn't think he made that happen. He consciously didn't intend to move the stick, but nonetheless, the muscle subconsciously did. Okay. Well, in fact, I believe, and this was suggested also by Hal Puthoff in the SRI research, that in fact the ideomotor response probably does play a role in dowsing, except that the source of the motion doesn't come from the dowser's misconceptions about where something might be, but actually originates in the subconscious, the same place the remote viewing signal emerges from, and that the subconscious recognizes the correct location and causes that ideomotor response to actually cause the implements to move.
All right, back to some fast blast questions for you. Joe from Wisconsin. Can you find your true love with dowsing? Well, that's interesting. Huh? Maybe you put a bunch of names down or something.
I would say you can, but if you get the wrong one, don't blame
you or the dowsing pendulum, huh?
Well, in a way, that's the same problem as whether you ought to take a certain job or whether you ought to buy a certain car. Again, it's the same problem. Dowsing isn't. I wouldn't rely on dowsing by itself in a situation like that because, again, you're going to make a certain choice, and you're never going to really know what would have happened if you'd have made a different choice in that case. Usually, you really get the best feedback with dowsing when you have two cases and you know what the outcome will be in either case, no matter which choice you make, like a stock. If you have a choice between two stocks, you want to know which one to buy because that'll be the best producer, you know, as far as income. And you pick that stock and you turn out to be wrong, you'll know that. You'll know you're wrong about that. But if you're trying to decide between two women, which one is your true love, and it indicates one, and you marry that one, let's say, you're not going to know how life would have been had you married the other one instead. So dowsing...
Shoulda, woulda, coulda, Paul.
Say again?
Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Exactly. So many people know that phrase, don't they?
Yes, they do.
At any rate, again, it's the case where once you've done all the analysis you can, once you've gotten all the facts you can, ultimately dowsing may be a tiebreaker, and because your subconscious may know something you don't, you may actually be able to pick the right woman that way, for example, or the right guy, whatever it might be. But in a case like that where you can't possibly know the outcome of either choice, I wouldn't use dowsing as the main tool, but I certainly could use it. You know, another example, of course, you have folks on the show every now and again who are very much concerned with the end times, the apocalypse,
yep,
and the end of the world and that sort of thing. And people often want to know, well, how can I find safe places and that stuff? Now, I tend to be very careful with any of that apocalyptic stuff. I'll tell you one thing. I know the world is going to end. But there's two things I won't tell you, how and when, because I have no idea. The world will end someday, right? Or we will have some kind of apocalyptic thing occur someday. But people still want to know, well, how can I make decisions surrounding that? Because in essentially, you're dealing in a situation with little information, low information environment. And that's where things like dowsing and remote viewing come in handy. It's in situations where you don't have enough information, which, of course, describes much of life anyway. So even in that kind of thing, let's say you're in an emergency situation. It doesn't even have to be an apocalyptic one. It can be one immediate short-term one. And you do not know, you have all the information you're ever going to get before you have to make a decision. You do not know what to do. Again, you know, dowsing may point you in the right direction.
Will there ever be an evolution with dowsing and remote viewing? Will it change? Will anything make it change in the future?
As far as the phenomenon itself, or how good we get with it?
How good we get? Well, I mean, like 5-10 years out.
Oh, yes. I think, in fact, that, you know, there are some unknowns here, but let's say things go the way I would like to see them go, where gradually people come to realize there really is something to this. We start getting more resources. We start getting researchers who want to explore not just whether or not it exists, but how you can improve it. I think given that in 10 years, we will find dowsing and remote viewing to be very much more valuable than they are now and fulfilling tasks that we probably never even thought of, and plenty of them that we have thought of.
And they'll almost be one and the same, I bet.
Well, yes. In fact, that's a good point. What I actually thought to say before and forgot I wanted to mention it is, one of the reasons why I think dowsing and remote viewing integrate the way they do is, in fact, they probably emerge from the same underlying human faculty. This is something else I've mentioned on your show before, but it certainly bears repeating, that all of these different so-called psychic arts or psychic modalities, at least any of them that have any real substance to them, or some things are claimed to be psychic skills, which really probably don't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that really do have some kind of effect and some kind of real result, I think all of those things emerge from basically the same underlying human faculty, and they're just different ways of expressing them and different, kind of like a Swiss Army knife, you might say. You know, you've got your basic knife, but then you have all these other tools. They're all part of the same knife, but for different situations you want to employ one, and different another situation you want to employ another. That's kind of how I see remote viewing and dowsing and scrying and, well, I don't know, clairvoyance, which, of course, is closely related to remote viewing, and all of these other things. If they work, they're probably part and parcel of the same underlying thing.
Sherry from St. Charles wants to know if you know if anyone has tried to douse the location of Bin Laden.
I do not know if anyone has.
Sounds like it would be easier than remote viewing.
Well, yes.
Just get a map of Pakistan.
Yeah, well, of course, now there's an assumption there, right?
Yeah.
That he is in Pakistan.
Are you let me ask you this. Okay. Are you supposed to assume when you do dowsing? Can you assume it's in Pakistan, or do you just have to?
Well, let me tell you something that one of my students did. The same one that's having fun with the lottery with dowsing. He is actually, of the several that attended the class, he's the one that's gone the furthest with it. I sent him a remote viewing target. Recently, when students take my course, we have the in-house part of the course, and they get all instruction, and they get training, and they actually get to do a bunch of sessions there. But I also want to do some follow-on so that they keep up their skills, and so they get these 10 sessions I send to them, and they work them and send it back. Well, I sent him one of these sessions, mailed it to him, and he got the session, and he's working it blind, and he's going through it, and at the very end, he decided to douse it. He doused the location of where that target was. And, in fact, he doused it correctly in the correct country, in the correct location, and that led him to have this little analytical overlay where he actually named the target, which is unusual in remote viewing. You don't usually actually name the target, say exactly what the target is.
Right.
But in this case, because of his dowsing, he was actually able to name the target. And I thought that was pretty darn good. I was very pleased with his progress there. But go back to the question you asked. Okay, let's say, let's use bin Laden as an example. Let's say also bin Laden could be anywhere in the world, because he can.
Which is very possible.
Yes, we have no idea where he is.
No, we don't even know if he's dead or alive.
That's right. We don't know for sure. But let's say he's somewhere in the world and he's still alive. Okay.
Right.
You can use dowsing, first of all, to narrow down where in the world he is. This sounds like a kid's game, doesn't it?
It does.
Anyway, you could use dowsing, potentially you could use dowsing to narrow down where in the world he is. And then let's say that your dowsing does then indicate that bin Laden is in Pakistan. Okay, then you can pull out a map of Pakistan and break it down by province and go from get down narrower and narrower and actually identify where in Pakistan he is. Now, I'm not going to say that it's going to work every time, because none of this psychic stuff works every time. But it is certainly possible for dowsing to do that, because I've done similar things to that when I was in the military unit, and we got verified feedback that we had succeeded. Okay, so I know it's possible to do that, which means that all it really takes ultimately is practice and training, and ultimately somebody will be able to do that.
Let's switch over to remote viewing for just a moment before we go to calls next hour, and then we'll let anybody just jump on and talk with you about anything they want here.
Great.
You know, we're at a time in our lives where I think this is a necessary tool, a necessary sense for people, that they should have it just to increase their intuitiveness. You know, maybe before their day starts, they do a mini little remote viewing of the day and things to do. Do you do that, Paul, now?
No. It hadn't occurred to me to do that, even actually.
See, I'm giving you all these great ideas tonight.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if I would. Here's one of the problems with knowing the future. Yeah, again, remember, that's the other thing that people want you to do, is know the future, right, to tell them the future. There's some real problems with that. Let's say you know what your future is going to be for the next, I don't know, 6 years, okay? There's two possible outcomes here. One is something is going to go really bad during those 6 years.
And probably will. We're human beings.
And probably will. And you will live in dread of that day, and you won't be able to live life fully in the here and now. Or sometime in the future, something really great is going to happen to you, because that may happen too, right? And then you will be able to live the life in the here and now, because you'll be living in anticipation of what's going to happen at that time. To me, knowing the future can actually mess up your life more than it can help it. So, I don't know. Maybe that's just a philosophical point, I guess. But,
well, there are some people who would love to know the future. There are other people who wouldn't, just let things go as they may. But, I mean, what if, for example, Paul, you remote viewed the future and you saw a truck hitting you because you went through a red light? Don't you think you'd be a little more aware when you were driving, and it might save you? There's
yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
As a matter of fact, that it would be the as far as I can see, really the only upside, okay, is that, in fact, if you could change the outcome of the future, then knowing what that's going to be could actually be beneficial.
If it's a bad future.
Yes. Or maybe recognizing an opportunity you would have missed. It wouldn't necessarily be a bad feature, but if you missed the opportunity, it wouldn't be as good as it could have been.
Yeah, maybe let's say you buy stocks and you remote view and you see this company going down the tank in the future and you were about ready to buy the stock. You know?
Well, like me, I should have used remote viewing in this case. I had 2,000 shares of America Online in 1993.
Oh.
And I sold it and made $4,000 and was very proud of myself.
2,000 shares. What'd you buy it at?
Oh, I think it was $17.
Oh, my gosh.
And I worked it out, and that would have been worth about $333 million today if I'd kept it.
$333 million?
Something along those lines, yeah.
Because it would have split.
Well, yeah, of course, that calculation was before it had its fall off. But even now, it would have been worth a whole lot of money if I'd have kept it. So.
Well.
You can see that I wasn't too smart, and I wasn't using my remote viewing, was I?
No, you weren't, but you might be able to do it again, huh?
Perhaps. Yeah.
Never say never.
Yeah.
Never say never. Are people remote viewing now, governmental people?
Of course, this is a question that often gets asked. And I can only give you my answer is I don't know. There's one fun thing that Lynn Buchanan says. I don't know that I've said it to you before, but he says this: if I knew there was a military remote viewing or a government remote viewing program going on, that would be highly secret, and I couldn't tell you, so I just have to say I don't know. And if there wasn't one going on, or at least if there was one and I didn't know about it, then all I could do is say I don't know. So I'm just going to tell you I don't know.
Well, that's an honest answer.
Yeah, but it's not very useful, is it?
it depends. Let's go back to some more fast blasts for you. If I use remote viewing to find bin Laden, could it also be used to locate missing people, little children, you name it? I think so.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in principle, the task is exactly the same. It's just the person that's different, right? And in fact, it has been used every once in a while, and probably more often than we know, to locate missing people.
How about Jimmy Hoffa? Can you find him?
You can probably find him.
Or the body, or if there's the remains.
Anything left of him, of course.
If there's anything left, he could have been ground up, for all we know.
Yeah, or dissolved in acid or something. And at that point, actually, you would have it would return nonsense. It's like dividing by zero. If you task somebody on something that doesn't exist, even though it may have existed in the past but doesn't exist anymore, you're just going to come up with who knows what. It's basically useless information, obviously.
If you're looking for, let's say, a missing kid, and you start and you know he's in a state, and then you douse that and you get it down to a city, then you get it down. If you keep getting, like, maps, and you keep getting down to a lower common denominator, mm-hmm. could you eventually find the exact spot? It's almost like a Google satellite map where you can get in closer and closer and closer.
Yes, in principle, that's exactly right. You could do that. Yeah, and it has been done. Obviously, it's pretty complicated. For example, although the new computer capabilities and the satellite capabilities actually make this much more doable than it was at the time when we were working on this stuff. If you have to keep getting smaller scale maps to get down, you know, you have to have some pretty good resources to do that. But with this, like the Google map and all that stuff, I haven't really actually played around with that much, but I'm thinking that there's probably a way of using that where you could make that sort of a dowsing approach very workable.
There's Gail from Las Vegas. She wants to know, if a peeping Tom becomes a remote viewer, how are innocent neighbors protected from its misuse?
Well, now that's an interesting question that we are going to toss around at the next remote viewing conference, as a matter of fact.
Can you stop a remote viewer from remote viewing you?
The short answer is no.
You can't.
No. Now,
you can't put up some kind of shield or anything.
No. Here's the saving thing about it, though. Remote viewing has to be done blind. In other words, the remote viewer can't know what the target is, if he's going to be successful or she's going to be successful. So that automatically kind of shuts out the idea of a peeping Tom. The idea of the peeping Tom, he's going to want to know who he wants to peep at, right? But if he knows who he wants to peep at, then if he's going to try remote viewing, he's already front-loaded. And front-loading really makes it very hard to get any real data. Because what
you're
happens
right.
is, well, I'm sorry, are you going to say something?
No, you're right.
Oh, yeah. You what would get in the way is your imagination, and he's going to be imagining anyway, so you can't stop that, right? But your imagination gets in the way.
He may be daydreaming.
Daydream, whatever. And so, really, remote viewing doesn't work very good for voyeurism.
Paul, we're going to come right back. We're going to take phone calls for the entire hour. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.